happened. Feeling Liz's emotions was one thing, but slipping into her was something we both despised. She saw it as an invasion of privacy, so I usually didn't tell her when it happened. Neither of us could control it. It was another effect of the bond, a bond neither of us fully understood. Legends existed about psychic links between guardians and their moroi, but the stories had never mentioned anything like this. We fumbled through it as best we could. Near the end of the flight, Dimitri walked back to where I sat and traded places with the guardian beside me. I pointedly turned away, staring out the window absent-mindedly. Several moments of silence passed. Finally, he said,
"Were you really going to attack all of us?"
I didn't answer.
"Doing that, protecting her like that, it was very brave."
He paused.
"Stupid, but still brave. Why did you even try it?"
I glanced over at him, brushing my hair out of my face so I could look him levelly in the eye. "Because I'm her guardian." I turned back toward the window. After another quiet moment, he stood up and returned to the front of the jet. When we landed, Lissa and I had no choice but to let the commandos drive us out to the academy. Our car stopped at the gate, and our driver spoke with the guards who verified we weren't Strigoi about to go off on a killing spree. After a minute, they let us pass on through the wards and up to the academy itself. It was around sunset, the start of the vampiric day, and the campus lay wrapped in shadows. It probably looked the same, sprawling and gothic. The moroi were big on tradition. Nothing ever changed with them. This school wasn't as old as the ones back in Europe, but it had been built in the same style. The buildings boasted elaborate, almost church-like architecture, with high peaks and stone carvings. Wrought iron gates enclosed small gardens and doorways here and there. After living on a college campus, I had a new appreciation for just how much this place resembled a university more than a typical high school. We were on the secondary campus, which was divided into lower and upper schools. Each was built around a large open quadrangle, decorated with stone paths and enormous century-old trees. We were going toward the upper school's quad, which had academic buildings on one side, while damp-hired dormitories and the gym sat opposite. Moroi dorms sat on one of the other ends, and opposite them were the administrative buildings that also served the lower school. Younger students lived on the primary campus, farther to the west. Around all the campuses was space, space, and more space. We were in Montana, after all, miles away from any real city. The air felt cool in my lungs and smelled of pine and wet, decaying leaves. Overgrown forests ringed the perimeters of the academy, and during the day, you could see mountains rising up in the distance. As we walked into the main part of the upper school, I broke from my guardian and ran up to Dimitri. "Hey, comrade." He kept walking and wouldn't look at me.
"You want to talk now?"
"Are you taking us to Kirova?"
"Headmistress Kirova," he corrected.
On the other side of him, Lissa shot me a look that said, "Don't start something." "Headmistress, whatever. She's still a self-righteous old bit." My words faded as the guardians led us through a set of doors, straight into the commons. I sighed. Were these people really so cruel? There had to be at least a dozen ways to get to Kirova's office, and they were taking us right through the center of the commons. And it was breakfast time. Novice guardians, vampires like me, and moroi sat together, eating and socializing, faces alight with whatever current gossip held the academy's attention. When we entered, the loud buzz of conversation stopped instantly, like someone had flipped a switch. Hundreds of sets of eyes swiveled toward us. I returned the stares of my former classmates with a lazy grin, trying to get a sense as to whether things had changed. Nope, didn't seem like it. Camille Conta still looked like the prim, perfectly groomed bitch I remembered, still the self-appointed leader of the Academy's Royal Moroi cliques. Off to the side, Lissa's gawky near-cousin Natalie watched with wide eyes, as innocent and naive as before. And on the other side of the room, well, That was interesting. Aaron. Poor, poor Aaron, who'd no doubt had his heart broken when Lyssa left. He still looked as cute as ever. Maybe more so now, with those same golden looks that complimented hers so well. His eyes followed her every move. Yes, definitely not over her. It was sad, really, because Lyssa had never really been all that into him. I think she'd gone out with him simply because it seemed like the expected thing to do. But what I found most interesting was that Aaron had apparently found a new way to pass the time without her. Beside him, holding his hand, was a Moroi girl who looked about 11, but had to be older, unless he'd become a pedophile during our absence. With plump little cheeks and blonde ringlets, she looked like a porcelain doll, a very pissed-off and evil porcelain doll. She gripped his hand tightly and shot Lyssa a look of such burning hatred that it stunned me. What the hell was that all about? She was no one I knew. Just a jealous girlfriend, I guessed. I'd be pissed, too, if my guy was watching someone else like that. Our walk of shame mercifully ended, though our new setting, Headmistress Kirova's office, didn't really improve things. The old hag looked exactly like I remembered, sharp-nosed and gray-haired. She was tall and slim, like most Moroi, and had always reminded me of a vulture. I knew her well because I'd spent a lot of time in her office. Most of our escorts left us once Lyssa and I were seated, and I felt a little less like a prisoner. Only Alberta, the captain of the school's guardians, and Dimitri stayed. They took up positions along the wall, looking stoic and terrifying, just as their job description required. Kirova fixed her angry eyes on us and opened her mouth to begin what would no doubt be a major bitch session. A deep, gentle voice stopped her.
Vasilisa.
Startled, I realized there was someone else in the room. I hadn't noticed. Careless for a guardian, even a novice one. With a great deal of effort, Viktor Dashikov rose from a corner chair. Prince Viktor Dashikov. Lyssa sprang up and ran to him, throwing her arms around his frail body.
Uncle, she whispered.
She sounded on the verge of tears as she tightened her grip. With a small smile, he gently patted her back.
You have no idea how glad I am to see you safe, Vasilisa.
He looked toward me.
And you too, Rose.
I nodded back, trying to hide how shocked I was. He'd been sick when we left, but this was horrible. He was Natalie's father, only about 40 or so, but he looked twice that age. Pale, withered, hands shaking. My heart broke watching him. With all the horrible people in the world, it didn't seem fair that this guy should get a disease that was going to kill him young and ultimately keep him from becoming king. Although not technically her uncle, the Moroi use family terms very loosely, especially the royals. Viktor was a close friend of Lyssa's family and had gone out of his way to help her after her parents had died. I liked him. He was the first person I was happy to see here. Kirova let them have a few more moments and then stiffly drew Lyssa back to her seat. Time for the lecture. It was a good one of Kirova's best, which was saying something. She was a master at them. I swear that was the only reason she'd gone into school administration, because I had yet to see any evidence of her actually liking kids. The rant covered the usual topics: responsibility, reckless behavior, self-centeredness, blech. I immediately found myself spacing out, alternatively pondering the logistics of escaping through the window in her office. But when the tirade shifted to me, well, that was when I tuned back in.
You, Miss Hathaway, broke the most sacred promise among our kind, the promise of a guardian to protect a Moroi. It is a great trust. A trust that you violated by selfishly taking the princess away from here. The Strigoi would love to finish off the Dragomirs. You nearly enabled them to do it.
Rose didn't kidnap me.
Lyssa spoke before I could, her voice and face calm, despite her uneasy feelings.
I wanted to go. Don't blame her.
Ms. Kirova tisked at both of us and paced the office, hands folded behind her narrow back.
Miss Dragomir, you could have been the one who orchestrated the entire plan, for all I know, but it was still her responsibility to make sure you didn't carry it out. If she'd done her duty, she would have notified someone. If she'd done her duty, she would have kept you safe.
I snapped. I did do my duty, I shouted, jumping up from my chair. Dimitri and Alberta both flinched, but left me alone since I wasn't trying to hit anyone. Yet. I did keep her safe. I kept her safe when none of you... I made a sweeping gesture around the room. Could do it. I took her away to protect her. I did what I had to do. You certainly weren't going to. Through the bond, I felt Lyssa trying to send me calming messages. Again, urging me not to let anger get the best of me. Too late. Kirova stared at me, her face blank.
Miss Hathaway, forgive me if I fail to see the logic of how taking her out of a heavily guarded, magically secured environment is protecting her. Unless there is something you aren't telling us.
I bit my lip.
I see. Well then, by my estimation, the only reason you left, aside from the novelty of it, no doubt, was to avoid the consequences of that horrible, destructive stunt you pulled just before your disappearance.
No, that's not...
And that only makes my decision that much easier. As a Moroi, the princess must continue on here at the Academy for her own safety. But we have no such obligations to you. You will be sent away as soon as possible.
My cockiness dried up. What? Lyssa stood up beside me.
You can't do that. She's my guardian.
She is no such thing, particularly since she isn't even a guardian at all. She's still a novice.
But my parents...
I know what your parents wanted, God rest their souls. But things have changed. Miss Hathaway is expendable. She doesn't deserve to be a guardian, and she will leave.
I stared at Kirova, unable to believe what I was hearing.
Where are you going to send me?
To my mom in Nepal? Did she even know I was gone? Or maybe you'll send me off to my father? Her eyes narrowed at the bite in that last word. When I spoke again, my voice was so cold I barely recognized it. Or maybe you're going to try to send me off to be a blood whore. Try that and we'll be gone by the end of the day.
Miss Hathaway, she hissed. You are out of line.
They have a bond.
Dimitri's low, accented voice broke the heavy tension, and we all turned toward him. I think Kirova had forgotten he was there, but I hadn't. His presence was way too powerful to ignore. He still stood against the wall, looking like some sort of cowboy sentry in that ridiculous long coat of his. He looked at me, not Lyssa, his dark eyes staring straight through me.
Rose knows what Vasilisa is feeling, don't you?
I at least had the satisfaction of seeing Kirova caught off guard as she glanced between us and Dimitri.
No, that's impossible. That hasn't happened in centuries.
It's obvious, he said. I suspected as soon as I started watching them.
Neither Lyssa nor I responded, and I averted my eyes from his.
That is a gift, murmured Victor from his corner. A rare and wonderful thing. The best guardians always had that bond, added Dimitri, in the stories.
Kirova's outrage returned.
Stories that are centuries old, she exclaimed. Surely you aren't suggesting we let her stay at the Academy after everything she's done.
He shrugged.
She might be wild and disrespectful, but if she has potential...
Wild and disrespectful? I interrupted. Who the hell are you, anyway? Outsourced help?
Guardian Belikov is the princess's guardian now, said Kirova. Her sanctioned guardian.
You got cheap foreign labor to protect Lyssa? That was pretty mean of me to say, particularly since most Moroi and their guardians were of Russian or Romanian descent. But the comment seemed cleverer at the time than it really was. And it wasn't like I was one to talk. I might have been raised in the U.S., but my parents were foreign-born. My vampire mother was Scottish, red hair with a ridiculous accent. And I'd been told my Moroi dad was Turkish. That genetic combination had given me skin the same color as the inside of an almond, along with what I like to think were semi-exotic desert princess features. Big dark eyes and hair so deep brown that it usually looked black. I wouldn't have minded inheriting the red hair, but we take what we get. Kirova threw her hands up in exasperation and turned to him.
You see? Completely undisciplined. All the psychic bonds and very raw potential in the world can't make up for that. A guardian without discipline is worse than no guardian.
So teach her discipline. Classes just started. Put her back in and get her training again.
Impossible. She'd still be hopelessly behind her peers.
No, I won't, I argued. No one listened to me.
Then give her extra training sessions, he said.
They continued on while the rest of us watched the exchange like it was a ping-pong game. My pride was still hurt over the ease with which Dmitri had tricked us, but it occurred to me that he might very well keep me here with Lyssa. Better to stay at this hellhole than be without her. Through our bond, I could feel her trickle of hope.
"Who's going to put in the extra time?" demanded Kirova. "You?"
Dmitri's argument came to an abrupt stop.
"Well, that's not what I—"
Kirova crossed her arms with satisfaction.
"Yes, that's what I thought."
Clearly at a loss, he frowned. His eyes flicked toward Lyssa and me, and I wondered what he saw. Two pathetic girls looking at him with big, pleading eyes? Or two runaways who'd broken out of a high-security school and swiped half of Lyssa's inheritance?
Yes, he said finally. I can mentor Rose. I'll give her extra sessions along with her normal ones.
And then what? Retorted Kirova angrily. She goes unpunished?
Find some other way to punish her, answered Dmitri. Guardian numbers have gone down too much to risk losing another. A girl in particular.
His unspoken words made me shudder, reminding me of my earlier statement about blood whores. Few vampire girls became guardians anymore. Victor suddenly spoke up from his corner.
I'm inclined to agree with Guardian Belikov. Sending Rose away would be a shame, a waste of talent.
Ms. Kirova stared out her window. It was completely black outside. With the Academy's nocturnal schedule, morning and afternoon were relative terms. That, and they kept the windows tinted to block out excess light. When she turned back around, Lyssa met her eyes.
Please, Miss Kirova, let Rose stay.
Oh, Lyssa, I thought. Be careful. Using compulsion on another Moroi was dangerous, particularly in front of witnesses. But Lyssa was only using a tiny bit, and we needed all the help we could get. Fortunately, no one seemed to realize what was happening. I don't even know if the compulsion made a difference, but finally Kirova sighed.
If Miss Hathaway stays, here's how it will be.
She turned to me.
Your continued enrollment at St. Vladimir's is strictly probationary. Step out of line once, and you're gone. You will attend all classes and required trainings for novices your age. You will also train with Guardian Belikov in every spare moment you have, before and after classes. Other than that, you are banned from all social activities, except meals, and you will stay in your dorm. Fail to comply with any of this, and you will be sent away.
I gave a harsh laugh. Banned from all social activities? Are you trying to keep us apart? I nodded toward Lyssa. Afraid we'll run away again?
I'm taking precautions, As I'm sure you recall, you were never properly punished for destroying school property. You have a lot to make up for."
Her thin lips tightened into a straight line.
"You are being offered a very generous deal. I suggest you don't let your attitude endanger it."
I started to say it wasn't generous at all, but then I caught Dimitri's gaze. It was hard to read. He might have been telling me he believed in me. He might have been telling me I was an idiot to keep fighting with Kirova. I didn't know. Looking away from him for the second time during the meeting, I stared at the floor, conscious of Lissa beside me and her own encouragement burning in our bond. At long last, I exhaled and glanced back up at the headmistress. "Fine, I accept." Chapter 3. Sending us straight to class after our meeting seemed beyond cruel, but that's exactly what Kirova did. Lissa was led away, and I watched her go, glad the bond would allow me to keep reading her emotional temperature. They actually sent me to one of the guidance counselors first. He was an ancient Moroi guy, one I remembered from before I left. I honestly couldn't believe he was still around. The guy was so freaking old he should have retired, or died. The visit took all of 5 minutes. He said nothing about my return and asked a few questions about what classes I'd taken in Chicago and Portland. He compared those against my old file and hastily scrawled out a new schedule. I took it sullenly and headed out to my first class. First period, Advanced Guardian Combat Techniques. Second period, Bodyguard Theory and Personal Protection 3. Third period, Weight Training and Conditioning. Fourth period, Senior Language Arts, Novices. Lunch. Fifth period, Animal Behavior and Physiology. Sixth period, Pre-Calculus. Seventh period, Moroi Culture 4. Eighth period, Slavic Art. Ugh, I'd forgotten how long the Academy's school day was. Novices and Moroi took separate classes during the first half of the day, which meant I wouldn't see Lissa until after lunch, if we had any afternoon classes together. Most of them were standard senior classes, so I felt my odds were pretty good. Slavic art struck me as the kind of elective no one signed up for, so hopefully they'd stuck her in there, too. Dimitri and Alberta escorted me to the Guardian's gym for first period, neither one acknowledging my existence. Walking behind them, I saw how Alberta wore her hair in a short, pixie cut that showed her promise mark and Molneo marks. A lot of female guardians did this. It didn't matter so much for me now, since my neck had no tattoos yet, but I didn't want to ever cut my hair. She and Dimitri didn't say anything and walked along almost like it was any other day. When we arrived, the reactions of my peers indicated it was anything but. They were in the middle of setting up when we entered the gym, and just like in the commons, all eyes fell on me. I couldn't decide if I felt like a rock star or a circus freak. All right, then. If I was going to be stuck here for a while, I wasn't going to act afraid of them all anymore. Lissa and I had once held this school's respect, and it was time to remind everyone of that. Scanning the staring, open-mouthed novices, I looked for a familiar face. Most of them were guys. One caught my eye, and I could barely hold back my grin. "Hey, Mason, wipe the drool off your face. If you're going to think about me naked, do it on your own time." A few snorts and snickers broke the awed silence, and Mason Ashford snapped out of his haze, giving me a lopsided smile. With red hair that stuck up everywhere and a smattering of freckles, he was nice-looking, though not exactly hot. He was also one of the funniest guys I knew. We'd been good friends back in the day. "This is my time, Hathaway. I'm leading today's session." "Oh, yeah?" I retorted. "Huh. Well, I guess this is a good time to think about me naked, then."
"It's always a good time to think about you naked," added someone nearby, breaking the tension further.
Eddie Castile, another friend of mine. Dimitri shook his head and walked off,
muttering something in Russian that didn't sound complimentary. But as for me, well, just like that, I was one of the novices again. They were an easygoing bunch, less focused on pedigree and politics than the Moroi students. The class engulfed me, and I found myself laughing and seeing those I'd nearly forgotten about. Everyone wanted to know where we'd been. Apparently, Lissa and I had become legends. I couldn't tell them why we'd left, of course, so I offered up a lot of taunts and wouldn't-you-like-to-knows that served just as well. The happy reunion lasted a few more minutes before the adult guardian who oversaw the training came over and scolded Mason for neglecting his duties. Still grinning, he barked out orders to everyone, explaining what exercises to start with. Uneasily, I realized I didn't know most of them.
"Come on, Hathaway," he said, taking my arm. "You can be my partner. Let's see what you've been doing all this time."
An hour later, he had his answer.
"Not practicing, huh?"
"Ow!" I groaned, momentarily incapable of normal speech. He extended a hand and helped me up from the mat he'd knocked me down on about 50 times. "I hate you," I told him, rubbing a spot on my thigh that was going to have a wicked bruise tomorrow.
"You'd hate me more if I held back."
"Yeah, that's true," I agreed, staggering along as the class put the equipment back.
"You actually did okay."
"What? I just had my ass handed to me."
"Well, of course you did. It's been 2 years. But hey, you're still walking, that's something."
He grinned mockingly. "Did I mention I hate you?" He flashed me another smile, which quickly faded to something more serious.
"Don't take this the wrong way. I mean, you really are a scrapper. But there's no way you'll be able to take your trials in the spring."
"They're making me take extra practice sessions," I explained. Not that it mattered. I planned on getting Lissa and me out of here before these practices really became an issue. "I'll be ready."
"Extra sessions? With who?"
"That tall guy, Dimitri." Mason stopped walking and stared at me.
"You're putting in extra time with Belikov?"
"Yeah, so what?"
"So, the man is a god."
"Exaggerate much?" I asked.
"No, I'm serious. I mean, he's all quiet and antisocial usually, but when he fights, wow. If you think you're hurting now, you're going to be dead when he's done with you."
"Great. Something else to improve my day." I elbowed him and went on to second period. That class covered the essentials of being a bodyguard and was required for all seniors. Actually, it was the third in a series that had started junior year. That meant I was behind in this class, too, but I hoped protecting Lissa in the real world had given me some insight. Our instructor was Stan Alto, whom we referred to simply as Stan, behind his back, and Guardian Alto in formal settings. He was a little older than Dimitri, but not nearly as tall, and he always looked pissed off. Today, that look intensified when he walked into the classroom and saw me sitting there. His eyes widened in mock surprise as he circled the room and came to stand beside my desk.
"What's this? No one told me we had a guest speaker here today. Rose Hathaway. What a privilege! How very generous of you to take time out of your busy schedule and share your knowledge with us."
I felt my cheeks burning, but in a great show of self-control, I stopped myself from telling him to fuck off. I'm pretty sure my face must have delivered that message, however, because his sneer increased. He gestured for me to stand up.
"Well, come on, come on. Don't sit there. Come up to the front so you can help me lecture the class."
I sank into my seat. "You don't really mean..." The taunting smile dried up.
"I mean exactly what I say, Hathaway. Go to the front of the class."
A thick silence enveloped the room. Stan was a scary instructor, and most of the class was too awed to laugh at my disgrace quite yet. Refusing to crack, I strode up to the front of the room and turned to face the class. I gave them a bold look and tossed my hair over my shoulders, earning a few sympathetic smiles from my friends. Then I noticed I had a larger audience than expected. A few guardians, including Dimitri, lingered in the back of the room. Outside the academy, guardians focused on one-on-one protection. Here, guardians had a lot more people to protect, and they had to train the novices. So rather than follow any one person around, they worked shifts, guarding the school as a whole and monitoring classes.
"So, Hathaway,"
said Stan cheerfully, strolling back up to the front with me,
"enlighten us about your protective techniques."
"My techniques?"
"Of course, because presumably you must have had some sort of plan the rest of us couldn't understand when you took an underage Morai royal out of the academy and exposed her to the constant Strigoi threats."
It was the Kirova lecture all over again, except with more witnesses. "We never ran into any Strigoi," I replied stiffly.
"Obviously," he said with a snicker. "I already figured that out, seeing as how you're still alive."
I wanted to shout that maybe I could have defeated a Strigoi, but after getting beat up in the last class, I now suspected I couldn't have survived an attack by Mason, let alone an actual Strigoi. When I didn't say anything, Stan started pacing in front of the class.
"So, what did you do? How did you make sure she stayed safe? Did you avoid going out at night?"
"Sometimes. That was true, especially when we'd first run away. We'd relaxed a little after months went by with no attacks."
"Sometimes?"
he repeated in a high-pitched voice, making my answer sound incredibly stupid.
"Well, then, I suppose you slept during the day and stayed on guard at night?"
No.
"No? But that's one of the first things mentioned in the chapter on solo guarding." "Oh, wait. You wouldn't know that, because you weren't here."
I swallowed back more swear words. "I watched the area whenever we went out," I said, needing to defend myself.
"Oh? Well, that's something. Did you use Carnegie's quadrant surveillance method, or the rotational survey?"
I didn't say anything.
"Ah, I'm guessing you used the Hathaway glance around when you remember to method."
"No," I exclaimed angrily. "That's not true. I watched her. She's still alive, isn't she?" He walked back up to me and leaned toward my face.
"Because you got lucky."
"Strigoi aren't lurking around every corner out there," I shot back. "It's not like what we've been taught. It's safer than you guys make it sound."
"Safer? Safer? We are at war with the Strigoi," he yelled.
I could smell coffee on his breath, he was so close.
"One of them could walk right up to you and snap your pretty little neck before you even noticed him. And he'd barely break a sweat doing it. You might have more speed and strength than a Morai or a human, but you are nothing, nothing compared to a Strigoi. They are deadly, and they are powerful. And do you know what makes them more powerful?"
No way I was going to let this jerk make me cry. Looking away from him, I tried to focus on something else. My eyes rested on Dimitri and the other guardians. They were watching my humiliation, stone-faced. "Morai blood," I whispered.
"What was that?" asked Stan loudly. "I didn't catch it."
I spun back around to face him.
"Morai blood! Morai blood makes them stronger."
He nodded in satisfaction and took a few steps back.
"Yes, it does. It makes them stronger and harder to destroy. They'll kill and drink from a human or vampire, but they want Morai blood more than anything else. They seek it,
They've turned to the dark side to gain immortality, and they want to do whatever they can to keep that immortality. Desperate Strigoi have attacked Moroi in public. Groups of Strigoi have raided academies, exactly like this one. There are Strigoi who have lived for thousands of years and fed off generations of Moroi. They're almost impossible to kill. And that's why Moroi numbers are dropping. They aren't strong enough, even with guardians, to protect themselves. Some Moroi don't even see the point of running anymore and are simply turning Strigoi by choice. And as the Moroi disappear...
So do the Dampires, I finished.
Well, he said, licking sprayed spit off his lips, it looks like you learned something after all. Now, we'll have to see if you can learn enough to pass this class and qualify for your field experience next semester.
Ouch. I spent the rest of that horrible class in my seat, thankfully, replaying those last words in my mind. The senior year field experience was the best part of a novice's education. We'd have no classes for half a semester. Instead, we'd each be assigned a Moroi student to guard and follow around. The adult guardians would monitor us and test us with staged attacks and other threats. How a novice passed that field experience was almost as important as all the rest of her grades combined. It could influence which Moroi she got assigned to after graduation. And me? There was only one Moroi I wanted. Two classes later, I finally earned my lunch escape. As I stumbled across campus toward the commons, Dimitri fell into step beside me, not looking particularly godlike, unless you counted his godly good looks. I suppose you saw what happened in Stan's class, I asked, not bothering with titles.
Yes.
And you don't think that was unfair?
Was he right? Do you think you were fully prepared to protect Vasilisa?
I looked down at the ground. I kept her alive, I mumbled.
How did you do fighting against your classmates today?
The question was mean. I didn't answer, and I knew I didn't need to. I'd had another training class after Stan's, and no doubt Dimitri had watched me get beat up there, too.
If you can't fight them...
Yeah, I know, I snapped. He slowed his long stride to match my pain-filled one.
You're strong and fast by nature. You just need to keep yourself trained. Didn't you play any sports while you were gone?
Sure, I shrugged. Now and then.
You didn't join any teams?
Too much work. If I'd wanted to practice that much, I'd have stayed here. He gave me an exasperated look.
You'll never be able to really protect the princess if you don't hone your skills. You'll always be lacking.
I'll be able to protect her, I said fiercely.
You have no guarantees of being assigned to her, you know, for your field experience or after you graduate.
Dimitri's voice was low and unapologetic. They hadn't given me a warm and fuzzy mentor.
No one wants to waste the blonde, but no one wants to give her an inadequate guardian either. If you want to be with her, then you need to work for it. You have your lessons. You have me. Use us or don't. You're an ideal choice to guard Vasilisa when you both graduate, if you can prove you're worthy. I hope you will.
Lissa, call her Lissa, I corrected. She hated her full name, much preferring the Americanized nickname. He walked away, and suddenly... I didn't feel like such a badass anymore. By now, I'd burned up a lot of time leaving class. Most everyone else had long since sprinted inside the commons for lunch, eager to maximize their social time. I'd almost made it back there myself when a voice under the door's overhang called to me.
Rose?
Peering in the voice's direction, I caught sight of Victor Dushkov, his kind face smiling at me as he leaned on a cane near the building's wall. His two guardians stood nearby at a polite distance. Mr. Dush, Your Highness, hi. I caught myself just in time, having nearly forgotten Moroi royal terms. I hadn't used them while living among humans. The Moroi chose their rulers from among 12 royal families.
The eldest in the family got the title of prince or princess. Lyssa had gotten hers because she was the only one left in her line.
"How was your first day?"
he asked. "Not over yet." I tried to think of something conversational. "Are you visiting here for a while?"
"I'll be leaving this afternoon, after I say hello to Natalie. When I heard Vasilisa and you had returned, I simply had to come and see you."
I nodded, not sure what else to say. He was more Lyssa's friend than mine.
"I wanted to tell you."
He spoke hesitantly.
"I understand the gravity of what you did, but I think Headmistress Kirova failed to acknowledge something. You did keep Vasilisa safe all this time. That is impressive."
"Well, it's not like I faced down Strigoi or anything," I said.
"But you faced down some things?"
"Sure. The school sent Psyhounds once."
"Remarkable."
"Not really. Avoiding them was pretty easy." He laughed.
"I've hunted with them before. They aren't that easy to evade, not with their powers and intelligence."
It was true. Psyhounds were one of many types of magical creatures that wandered the world, creatures that humans never knew about or else didn't believe they'd really seen. The hounds traveled in packs and shared a sort of psychic communication that made them particularly deadly to their prey, as did the fact that they resembled mutant wolves.
"Did you face anything else?"
I shrugged. "Little things here and there."
"Remarkable," he repeated.
"Lucky, I think. It turns out I'm really behind in all this guardian stuff." I sounded just like Stan now.
"You're a smart girl. You'll catch up. And you also have your bond."
I looked away. My ability to feel Lyssa had been such a secret for so long, it felt weird to have others know about it.
"The histories are full of stories of guardians who could feel when their charges were in danger," Victor continued. "I've made a hobby of studying up on it and some of the ancient ways. I've heard it's a tremendous asset."
"I guess," I shrugged. What a boring hobby, I thought, imagining him poring over prehistoric histories in some dank library covered in spider webs. Victor tilted his head, curiosity all over his face. Kirova and the others had had the same look when we'd mentioned our connection, like we were lab rats.
"What's it like, if you don't mind me asking?"
I don't know. I just sort of always have this hum of how she feels. Usually it's just emotions. We can't send messages or anything. I didn't tell him about slipping into her head. That part of it was hard even for me to understand.
"But it doesn't work the other way. She doesn't sense you."
I shook my head. His face shone with wonder.
"How did it happen?"
"I don't know," I said, still glancing away. "Just started 2 years ago." He frowned.
"Near the time of the accident?"
Hesitantly, I nodded. The accident was not something I wanted to talk about, that was for sure. Lyssa's memories were bad enough, without my own mixing into them. Twisted metal, a sensation of hot, then cold, then hot again. Lyssa screaming over me, screaming for me to wake up, screaming for her parents and her brother to wake up. None of them had. Only me. And the doctor said that it was a miracle in itself. They said I shouldn't have survived. Apparently sensing my discomfort, Victor let the moment go and returned to his earlier excitement.
"I still can barely believe this. It's been so long since this has happened. If it did happen more often, just think what it could do for the safety of all Moroi. If only others could experience this too. I'll have to do more research and see if we can replicate it with others."
"Yeah." I was getting impatient, despite how much I liked him. Natalie rambled a lot, and it was pretty clear which parent she'd inherited that quality from. Lunch was ticking down, and although Moroi and novices shared afternoon classes, Lyssa and I wouldn't have much time to talk. Perhaps we could... He started coughing, a great seizing fit that made his whole body shake. His disease, Sandowski syndrome, took the lungs down with it while dragging the body toward death. I cast an anxious look at his guardians, and one of them stepped forward.
Your Highness,
he said politely.
You need to go inside. It's too cold out here.
Victor nodded.
Yes, yes. And I'm sure Rose here wants to eat.
He turned to me.
Thank you for speaking to me.
I can't emphasize how much it means to me that Vasilisa is safe, and that you helped with that. I'd promised her father I'd look after her if anything happened to him, and I felt like quite the failure when you left.
A sinking sensation filled my stomach as I imagined him racked with guilt and worry over our disappearance. Until now, I hadn't really thought about how others might have felt about us leaving. We made our goodbyes, and I finally arrived inside the school. As I did, I felt Lissa's anxiety spike. Ignoring the pain in my legs, I picked up my pace into the commons and nearly ran right into her. She didn't see me, though. Neither did the people standing with her, Aaron and that little doll girl. I stopped and listened, just catching the end of the conversation. The girl leaned toward Lissa, who seemed more stunned than anything else.
It looks to me like it came from a garage sale. I thought a precious Dragomir would have standards.
Scorn dripped off the word Dragomir. Grabbing Doll Girl by the shoulder, I jerked her away. She was so light, she stumbled 3 feet and nearly fell.
She does have standards, I said, which is why you're done talking to her.
Chapter 4. We didn't have the entire commons' attention this time, thank God, but a few passing people had stopped to stare.
What the hell do you think you're doing?
Asked Doll Girl, blue eyes wild and sparkling with fury. Up close now, I was able to get a better look at her. She had the same slim build as most Moroi, but not the usual height, which was partly what made her look so young. The tiny purple dress she wore was gorgeous, reminding me that I was, indeed, dressed in thrift shop wear. But closer inspection led me to think it was a designer knockoff. I crossed my arms across my chest. Are you lost, little girl? The elementary school's over on West Campus. A pink flush spread over her cheeks.
Don't you ever touch me again. You screw with me, and I'll screw you right back.
Oh, man, what an opening that was. Only a headshake from Lissa stopped me from unleashing any number of hilarious comebacks. Instead, I opted for simple brute force, so to speak. And if you mess with either of us again, I'll break you in half. If you don't believe me, go ask Dawn Yarrow about what I did to her arm in 9th grade. You were probably at nap time when it happened. The incident with Dawn hadn't been one of my finer moments. I honestly hadn't expected to break any bones when I shoved her into a tree. Still, the incident had given me a dangerous reputation in addition to my smart-ass one. The story had gained legendary status, and I liked to imagine that it was still being told around campfires late at night. Judging from the look on this girl's face, it was. One of the patrolling staff members strolled by right then, casting suspicious eyes at our little meeting. Doll Girl backed off, taking Aaron's arm.
Come on, she said.
Hey, Aaron, I said cheerfully, remembering he was there. Nice to see you again. He gave me a quick nod and an uneasy smile, just as the girl dragged him off. Same old Aaron. He might be nice and cute, but aggressive he was not. I turned to Lissa. You okay? She nodded. Any idea who I just threatened to beat up?
Not a clue.
I started to lead her toward the lunch line, but she shook her head at me. Gotta go see the feeders. A funny feeling settled over me. I'd gotten so used to being her primary blood source that the thought of returning to the Moroi's normal routine seemed strange. In fact, it almost bothered me. It shouldn't have.
Daily feedings were part of a Moroi's life, something I hadn't been able to offer her while living on our own. It had been an inconvenient situation, one that left me weak on feeding days and her weak on the days in between. I should have been happy she would get some normality. I forced a smile. Sure. We walked into the feeding room, which sat adjacent to the cafeteria. It was set up with small cubicles, dividing the room's space in an effort to offer privacy. A dark-haired Moroi woman greeted us at the entrance and glanced down at her clipboard, flipping through the pages. Finding what she needed, she made a few notes and then gestured for Lissa to follow. Me, she gave a puzzled look, but she didn't stop me from entering. She led us to one of the cubicles, where a plump, middle-aged woman sat leafing through a magazine. She looked up at our approach and smiled. In her eyes, I could see the dreamy, glazed-over look most feeders had. She'd probably neared her quota for the day, judging from how high she appeared to be. Recognizing Lissa, her smile grew.
"Welcome back, Princess."
The greeter left us, and Lissa sat down in the chair beside the woman. I sensed a feeling of discomfort in her, a little different from my own. This was weird for her, too. It had been a long time. The feeder, however, had no such reservations. An eager look crossed her face, the look of a junkie about to get her next fix. Disgust poured into me. It was an old instinct, one that had been drilled in over the years. Feeders were essential to Moroi life. They were humans who willingly volunteered to be regular blood source. Humans from the fringes of society who gave their lives over to the secret world of the Moroi. They were well cared for and given all the comforts they could need. But at the heart of it, they were drug users, addicts to Moroi saliva and the rush it offered with each bite. The Moroi and guardians looked down on this dependency, even though the Moroi couldn't have survived otherwise unless they took victims by force. Hypocrisy at its finest. The feeder tilted her head, giving Lissa full access to her neck. Her skin there was marked with scars from years of daily bites. The infrequent feedings Lissa and I had done had kept my neck clear. My bite marks never lasted more than a day or so. Lissa leaned forward, fangs biting into the feeder's yielding flesh. The woman closed her eyes, making a soft sound of pleasure. I swallowed, watching Lissa drink. I couldn't see any blood, but I could imagine it. A surge of emotion grew in my chest. Longing. Jealousy. I averted my eyes, staring at the floor. Mentally, I scolded myself. What's wrong with you? Why should you miss it? You only did it once every day. You aren't addicted, not like this, and you don't want to be. But I couldn't help myself. I couldn't help the way I felt as I recalled the bliss and rush of a vampire's bite. Lissa finished, and we returned to the commons, moving toward the lunch line. It was short since we only had 15 minutes left, and I strolled up and began to load my plate with French fries and some rounded, bite-sized objects that looked vaguely like chicken nuggets. Lissa only grabbed a yogurt. Moroi needed food, as vampires and humans did, but rarely had an appetite after drinking blood. "So, how'd classes go?" I asked. She shrugged. Her face was bright with color and life now. "Okay. Lots of stares. A lot of stares. Lots of questions about where we were. Whispering." "Same here," I said. The attendant checked us out, and we walked toward the tables. I gave Lissa a sidelong glance. "You okay with that? They aren't bothering you, are they?"
"No, it's fine."
The emotions coming through the bond contradicted her words. Knowing I could feel that, she tried to change the subject by handing me her class schedule. I looked it over. First period, Russian 2. Second period, American Colonial Literature. Third period, Basics of Elemental Control. Fourth period, Ancient Poetry. Lunch. Fifth period, Animal Behavior and Physiology. Sixth period, Advanced Calculus. Seventh period, Moroi Culture 4. Eighth period, Slavic Art. "Nerd," I said.
If you were in stupid math like me, we'd have the same afternoon schedule. I stopped walking. Why are you in elemental basics? That's a sophomore class. She eyed me.
Because seniors take specialized classes.
We fell silent at that. All Moroi wielded elemental magic. It was one of the things that differentiated living vampires from Strigoi, the dead vampires. Moroi viewed magic as a gift. It was part of their souls and connected them to the world. A long time ago, they had used their magic openly, averting natural disasters and helping with things like food and water production. They didn't need to do that as much anymore, but the magic was still in their blood. It burned in them and made them want to reach out to the earth and wield their power. Academies like this existed to help Moroi control the magic and learn how to do increasingly complex things with it. Students also had to learn the rules that surrounded magic, rules that had been in place for centuries and were strictly enforced. All Moroi had a small ability in each element. When they got to be around our age, students specialized when one element grew stronger than the others. Earth, water, fire, or air. Not specializing was like not going through puberty. And Lyssa, well, Lyssa hadn't specialized yet. Is Miss Carmack still teaching that? What did she say?
She says she's not worried. She thinks it'll come.
Did you tell her about... Lyssa shook her head.
No, of course not.
We let the subject drop. It was one we thought about a lot, but rarely spoke of. We started moving again, scanning the tables as we decided where to sit. A few pairs of eyes looked up at us with blatant curiosity.
Lyssa!
Came a nearby voice. Glancing over, we saw Natalie waving at us. Lyssa and I exchanged looks. Natalie was sort of Lyssa's cousin in the way Victor was sort of her uncle, but we'd never hung out with her all that much. Lyssa shrugged and headed in that direction.
Why not?
I followed reluctantly. Natalie was nice, but also one of the most uninteresting people I knew. Most royals at the school enjoyed a kind of celebrity status, but Natalie had never fit in with that crowd. She was too plain, too uninterested in the politics of the academy, and too clueless to really navigate them anyway. Natalie's friends eyed us with a quiet curiosity, but she didn't hold back. She threw her arms around us. Like Lyssa, she had jade-green eyes, but her hair was jet black, like Victor's had been before his disease grayed it.
You're back! I knew you would be. Everyone said you were gone forever, but I never believed that. I knew you couldn't stay away. Why'd you go? There are so many stories about why you left.
Lyssa and I exchanged glances as Natalie prattled on.
Camille said one of you got pregnant and went off to have an abortion, but I knew that couldn't be true. Someone else said you went off to hang out with Rose's mom, but I figured Ms. Kirova and Daddy wouldn't have been so upset if you turned up there. Did you know we might get to be roommates? I was talking to...
On and on she chatted, flashing her fangs as she spoke. I smiled politely, letting Lyssa deal with the onslaught, until Natalie asked a dangerous question.
What do you do for blood, Lyssa?
The table regarded us questioningly. Lyssa froze, but I immediately jumped in, the lie coming effortlessly to my lips. Oh, it's easy. There are a lot of humans who want to do it.
Really?
Asked one of Natalie's friends, wide-eyed.
Yep. You find them at parties and stuff. They're all looking for a fix from something, and they don't really get that a vampire's doing it. Most are already so wasted they don't remember anyway.
My already vague details dried up, so I simply shrugged in as cool and confident a way as I could manage. It wasn't like any of them knew any better. Like I said, it's easy, almost easier than with our own feeders. Natalie accepted this, and then launched into some other topic. Lyssa shot me a grateful look. Ignoring the conversation again, I took in the old faces, trying to figure out who was hanging out with whom and how power had shifted within the school. Mason, sitting with a group of novices, caught my eye, and I smiled. Near him, a group of Moroi royals sat, laughing over something.
Aaron and the blonde girl sat there, too. "Hey, Natalie," I said, turning around and cutting her off. She didn't seem to notice or mind. "Who's Aaron's new girlfriend?"
"Huh?"